John Boucher. This is CBS Eye on the World, and I'm speaking with the novelist, the first novelist, J.H. Galarenter. His new book is Hold Fast. It is a work of fiction about a hero who is an intelligence officer with the Royal Marines serving the crown in London in the period 1803. This is now 1803, the spring of 1803. And again, we're not giving the plot away, but there are wonderful characters. There's lots of happenstance. There's a great deal of violence and excitement. And then there is Paris. Josh, take us into Paris as you introduce Thomas Gray. This is the period when they're no longer executing aristocrats. They're coming back. What did Paris resemble at the time in your presentation? What did Gray meet?
Paris was sort of on the upswing again. Napoleon, sort of like, Mussolini wanting to get the trains to run on time. Napoleon really wanted to get Paris back to being the prestigious European city that it had been prior to the revolution. And so he was cleaning everything up. He had just, raised the sort of slum neighborhoods that ran next to the Louvre and the Tuileries. And he's building the first, or has just built the first iron bridge across the Seine. And he's reorganizing the city into carefully numbered postal codes. And at the same time, he's sort of reestablishing a connection between the French government and the Catholic Church, which had been bitterly oppressed under the sort of anti-religious views of the Jacobins, who had been running the country for the last 8 years. Notre Dame was actually scheduled for destruction, I think, at the time. It was covered in graffiti. It was sort of partly smashed up. Church property had been seized all over the city. Churches weren't allowed to ring their bells to announce mass, and priests couldn't wear their vestments. Nuns couldn't wear their clerical clothes out in public, and Napoleon was changing all that. So Paris was sort of rebuilding.
Yes,
back to what it had been.
And he's bringing back the aristocrats, including your antagonist, Dumont. And he's restoring lands, or allowing lands to be restored, to the Napoleonic aristocracy. You introduce us a great deal to Champagne. I did not remember, I'm not sure I ever knew that Champagne was disregarded by the French themselves. It appears that only the English cared about it.
The English found the bubbles very amusing. They thought they were a real bonus addition to wine. I suppose the debate about carbonation in drinks has been going on since then, one way or another. But yeah, the French found the bubbles to be a grievous fault, but the English really liked them, and that's what caused the initial burst in popularity of champagne around Europe. And then it caught on in Russia, and then eventually back in Paris.
And here in the 21st century, still a very popular drink hundreds of years later, without any effort by the French whatsoever. We celebrate it and pay premium for it here. One other, because Josh is very good at giving you the details of what our hero runs into. So he runs into champagne. He also runs into a weapon that is magical, and I don't know how to say it correctly. The Girondini rifle?
Actually, there's some debate among everyone about whether it's Girondini or Girondoni. But I'm calling it the Girondoni in the book.
It is a repeater. We will not see similar repeaters until the Sharps rifle of the second, or the Spencer rifle of the Civil War. How does it work? What is the genius of it that you discovered, Josh?
It was a real gun. It was the first real functional repeater that made it onto the battlefields of Europe. It just didn't make it very far because it was difficult to produce. Very expensive to make and somewhat fragile once you had it going. But it was basically an air rifle. It had its buttstock was replaced with a reservoir for compressed air. It's sort of like a modern paintball gun. And you would load bullets with a lever, balls individually into an air channel, which would eject them at extremely high velocity. This is the air was pressurized in the buttstock much higher than a paintball gun. It was accurate. It would send. It was like a 46 caliber.
I have the advantage of having just read Josh's novel, 46 caliber, which is a very big hole. Very big hole.
Yeah, it's a big ball, and it was thrown with immense velocity. It was lethal at 100 yards, could penetrate an inch of wood. And it's interesting that a lot of the detail we have on the functioning of the gun comes from Meriwether Lewis's account of the Lewis and Clark expedition, because he actually had one of these that he took along with him, and it was one of the reasons for the success of the rifle, not because he ever shot anyone with it, but because as they would cross the country, he would use it to impress the American Indians who he met. It was, sort of like a carnival sideshow that everyone got a big kick out of seeing this air gun. A nice basis for friendship with the people they met, but yes. He describes it with great enthusiasm, and it's sort of interesting that it never caught on, because it would be a little like the first jet aircraft being invented and then not finding popular military use for another 50 years.
Well, we're aware of that wonderful paraphrase, "I can only do it, the future's already here, it's just not well organized." Josh, and you put this rifle in the hands of our hero, Thomas Gray, and he is Murder Incorporated, because it is everything a machine gun could possibly be in the Napoleonic period. Again, we're not giving the plot away. Our hero lives, of course, because there'll be many more opportunities to discern the plans of Napoleon, who was understood as the first world dictator at the time, a genuine threat to the English crown. The book is Hold Fast. I hope we've held back. There's a heroine in the book. There are love affairs. There's a villain. Well, sort of a villain. He's a good bad guy. And then there is the English intelligence service to look forward to, because our hero, having started out heading to America because he's lost his wife, winds up being called to the Admiralty for his new orders. Josh is J.H. Galerenter. The book is Hold Fast, just published by Norton, by our favorite editor at Norton, Star Lawrence, the man who edited Patrick O'Brien's series and now will edit J.H. Galerenter's series. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World. Pacific Ocean. Science Magazine reports the surprise in a new study that there are 500 billion coral colonies in the Pacific Ocean. 80 of the 318 coral species identified are considered vulnerable, endangered, or critically endangered. However, 12 of these 80 at risk, according to the new paper in Nature Ecology and Evolution, have estimated populations of 1 billion each. A recommendation is for a rethink of the critical list. All hours of the John Batchelor Show available all the time on distinguished podcasters such as Apple Podcasts.